Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week we'll be talking with the creators of Dead Man Walking, the graphic edition, author Sister Helen Prejean, scriptwriter Rose Vines, and artist Catherine Anyango Grunewald. Sister Helen Prejean of the Congregation of St. Joseph is known worldwide for sparking a dialogue on the death penalty through her work as a spiritual advisor and a storyteller. Her book, Dead Man Walking, has been turned into a film, a play, and an opera. More on that later. And now an absolutely stunning graphic novel. Catherine Anyango Grunewald of Kenya and Sweden is the artist who created the illustrations for this edition. She is the winner of the Navigator Art on Paper Prize, the world's largest award for work on paper, and teaches at the Kunstfack University of Arts, Crafts, and Design in Stockholm. She is the author of Scandorama and a graphic novel edition of Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness. Rose Vines is a writer, editor, and technology expert who works with Sister Helen at the Ministry Against Death Penalty and is the scriptwriter for this splendid new edition. You can subscribe to the Substack newsletter, Graphic Dead Man Walking, that she and Sister Helen create. Welcome, Sister Helen. Welcome, Rose.
Glad to be here.
Yeah.
And Catherine, such a joy to have you join us from Sweden.
Thank you very much. It's really nice to be here.
Now, Sister Helen, Dead Man Walking was published first in 1993, and I'm struck by how many ways your written work has been put to use in the best possible sense. And your ministry has been a global one, but it's centered on writing, which you wrote so eloquently about in River of Fire. And I wonder, what do you think and what do you feel when you see this version of your book through Catherine's eyes?
Very, very exciting. Because, you know, there's a saying from Latin America, what the eye doesn't see, the heart can't feel. Mm-hmm. And executions are secret rituals behind prison walls, very few people. So this graphic of Dead Man Walking really makes it come alive. And it's aimed for young readers. We're going to reach out to young people all over this country to get this book in their hands and the dialogue that goes with it. Mm-hmm. And I had to trust the artist. I had to trust Rose that she would go to the heart of the book, which she knew so well, and Catherine would be able to illustrate it. 6 years they worked on this. So I'm anxious to hear from mainly from them today about the dynamic of how you take a text from a book and transform it into a graphic story.
Now, Rose, you were the person who brought Catherine into the project, am I right?
That's right.
So talk about what it was about her work that appealed to you.
I knew very little about graphic books when I first started this project. So I went and sat in Barnes & Noble in the graphic section and just looked and looked and looked. And I came across Catherine's amazing version of Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness. And I was completely wowed. I wasn't sure at that stage if her style was going to be fit what we were going to do. But we talked about it and talked about how young readers, and by young I mean anyone up to about the age of 40, you know, into graphic reading. And the type of stuff is often very, I'm going to use the word phantasmagorical, almost.
I love that word.
Yeah. And looking at Catherine's work, we were so amazed by it and so reached out via Twitter.
So, Catherine, when you commit to a project like this, you're not just committing to a moment, you're committing to years of work. So talk a little bit about making that big decision in your artistic life.
Well, if I have to be completely honest, the timeline was a little shorter to begin with.
Aren't they always?
We had promised to deliver by 2021, I think. But things like the pandemic got in the way. And also it was obvious once we started working that there was so much to do. in terms of the adaptation, in terms of how I was going to deliver this world to an audience in a different way. And Rose has actually also done a lot of work in bringing in new elements, helping us understand some histories and futures that have happened. So that took time as well. Time has been really strange throughout this process because we've been working on it so long, and at certain points we've been excited because the end is near, and then the end came, and then we were beyond the end when Random House were doing the post-production, and now we're beyond the end of beyond the end.
yeah, or the beginning. So,
and the beginning and of the next phase, right?
Exactly.
But you must have had that inner moral commitment as well to its importance.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's also something which came about because of my first graphic novel, which is an adaptation of Heart of Darkness. Mm-hmm. Talks about the Belgian colonization of the Congo. I did that when I was quite young, and I had never published a book before. But the reaction to that book, it was so huge. It was huge in a sense that people were interested in the content as well as sort of experience of reading the graphic novel. So I got to talk a lot about colonization and imperialism mm-hmm. and violence and brutality of that regime and see how people reacted to being told a story in that way. So for me, it was like, okay, I can do this again. I can, as Sister Helen said, show young readers who didn't grow up at the same time as we did, who haven't read the original book, I can bring that world to them. For me, that's really important.
Now, I'm very curious. You've said in your work, one of the ideas that you're interested in exploring is that of the observer. And it strikes me that Sister Helen's work as an observer and a minister to death row inmates has been a really kind of different, freighted kind of observation. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that, about rendering that act of bearing witness.
Yes, I think that's super important because just as an illustrator, it is part of my job to bear witness, sometimes in real time, sometimes looking back. And sort of I'm bearing witness to Sister Helen's bearing witness, mm-hmm. but I'm also, because of the way Rose has made the adaptation, able to bear witness to more contemporary obstructions of justice and bear witness to how this has played out over time since 1993. And people ask me often when I give talks, how is it I can work with subjects like imperialism, like violence, like crime, like the death penalty, and not have it affect me? And like, I don't have some sort of great answers to that because it does affect me a lot. And I'm sure it affects his head a lot. But I imagine that we're the same in that we understand that it doesn't stop happening if you don't witness it.
Right.
And that if you have the capacity to witness it in some sort of way, and the way I have is drawing, and the way Sister Helen has is being with people and then writing about it, then I think you have a responsibility to be that witness. And as Sister Helen said a second ago,
what the eye does not see, the heart does not feel.
Exactly. And it's very, very possible for things to go unseen. And there's no limit to how much we can try to see things and try to not just see them, but then to let other people see them through our craft. I think that's just really important.
Now, Sister Helen, when you came in this afternoon, you were carrying one copy of an illustration that meant a lot to you, that you really liked. I wonder if you'd describe that for us and talk about it for a second.
All right. You might hear a little rustle of a paper because I photocopied the page. And just to say, I had to trust Rose that she knew the journey that was in the book and she would get the key things. And so there's one of these pictures sort of toward the middle of the book, and it was about the execution of Robert Willie. I had been with a man already, Pat Saunier, who was mm-hmm. electrocuted to death. And at the time when they put the mask over his face, I shut my eyes. Mm-hmm. But this shows, and what it says is, this time I do not close my eyes. I watch everything. And I love this picture. And I'm holding Robert Willie's hat. He always wore this little black knitted hat. And I'm holding it. I do not close my eyes. I watch everything. And that's kind of the heart of the story for me.
Mm-hmm. What's it like for you to see yourself as a character in a book now? Drawn, well, rather, well, you know?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, I've been there's the Sister Helen in the opera.
I know.
There's the Sister Helen in the movie. But you know what it is, Susan?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, here's the heart of it for me. I'm kind of a prism through which they shine the light to tell the story. And it's to bring the American people close to what the government's doing in their name. And that's the heart of it all.
Right.
And Rose knew how to select those key passages to feed to Catherine, and very much they worked on this just side by side, nip and tuck.
So let's talk about that a little bit, Rose and Catherine, because this is a big book. I mean, it's 300 pages. There is an execution at the very center of it, which I think was such a brilliant choice to make in putting this book together. But you had to distill the work of Dead Man Walking. You also added a lot of material about the death penalty, I think. And then, Catherine, you had to bring your visual language to it and shape it as well. So how did you guys work together? I mean, what came first?
This is Rose. So we had to sort of work it out at first, because I'd never written a script for a graphic book. And Catherine was more experienced in the field. And actually, to begin with, I'd read a whole bunch of books about how to write a script, and that was not at all what Catherine needed, you know, because it would be laying out the panes and saying what happened in each panel or the page and everything. And it was a much more fluid thing that we came to, which was me providing the dialogue and the narration and a general idea of what I thought would be good to illustrate. And then Catherine, of course, taking some of that and going with it, and taking some of it and turning it into something completely different. And so over time, we developed this, I think, a really good working relationship over Zoom and sending documents back and forth. And for me, it was a really lovely education. So it was a wonderful process.
So which came first? That you're...
It was the chicken.
Yeah, I know. I'm surprised there's not a chicken in this book. There are ants in this book, and there is an owl. There are owls in this book. I love those touches that you added. Talk a little bit about that, Catherine.
Oh, sorry. I just want to touch on what Rose said about the process. And when we started, Rose was sending me sort of descriptions of panels. Then I sort of politely said, oh, no, thank you. but then I think that was really freeing for Rose, because then she could work on the writing rather than the visual side, which I would take care of. I just want to do a shout out to illustration, because I think a lot of people don't quite understand the power of illustration and the power that illustrators have to use tools like composition, color, spacing, form, texture, line, all of these things to tell a story in a subliminal way, so that everything you have on the page is arranged in a way to make the viewer feel something, not just the pictures of what is there, but the way it's arranged. And I think that's so important in an age of AI, because an AI can make a picture of something, but it can't make a picture about something. And I think I just want to shout out, because I know people might lose their jobs to what illustration can do.
Well, I just have to be a fan for a minute. And one of the things I have to say about this book is that it is such a thing of beauty. I mean, what you have done with graphic elements like detailed illustrations, newspaper clippings, photographs, handwritten letters, the way you can take even a piece of legal paper and use the lines in that paper to construct an image and a feeling of you know, enclosure, and the way you create institutions as such overwhelming presences in these illustrations. And the color too. I wonder if you talk a little bit about that, because this book just glows in your hands.
Oh, that is so very nice. Thank you. I could talk a little bit about the prison as an institution, because I feel like the prison is a character in this book.
Yes.
Because it impacts so much on the lives of those who are in it. And I'm really interested in the idea of abjection and the border. The prison in Dead Man Walking acts as a border between liberty and, what's the other word, incarceration. Mm-hmm. But it's also very unnatural. It's full of grids. It's full of lines. You have these chain link fences. You have tiles everywhere. And there are layers upon layers upon layers of grids. And then you have this organic human body caught in the middle of it. And I think that as a sort of opponent, a visual opponent, it was really interesting for me to try to translate this geometry that Sister Helen writes about into visual language to make people understand the unnaturalness of the prison as a place to be.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with the creators of Dead Man Walking, the graphic edition, author Sister Helen Prejean, scriptwriter Rose Vines, and artist Catherine Anyango Grunewald. One of the things I'd love for you to talk about a bit, Catherine, and you too, Rose and Sister Helen, is that image of the death chamber. What went into creating that image? Because you've said that your interest, this was from a previous art exhibit of yours, but you talked about spaces where things are about to happen and not necessarily good things, and tile. There's such emotional integrity in that drawing, that green chamber with this chair at the very center of it. So I wonder if you talk about creating that image, because it has such emotional integrity, that drawing, to me.
This is Rose. The interesting thing is how chairs are such a through line. And Sister Helen will be sitting in a chair reading a book, and then there's an execution chair near her, or the witnesses' chairs. And the juxtaposition of all those chairs all the way through is so artfully done by Catherine. It's amazing.
I looked at a lot of pictures of chairs, the execution chair, and I read a lot about how it was. So I can start by just talking about the first page after the prologue, where mm-hmm. we have an ordinary person gets involved in extraordinary events, and then we talk about the death penalty. So I've got the two panels there where we have Sister Helen's reading chair and the death chair. And that's what I call what's called a match cut in cinema, which I use quite often in illustration, where you link things ideologically through being matched visually. So it's trying to talk about the electric chair as an object sits in the same landscape as the chair we sit in every day. Mm-hmm. So it's possible for someone like Sister Helen to live an ordinary life, but be linked somehow to this kind of death space. And the one you pointed out at 158, mm-hmm. that's quite an interesting spread to talk about, because here we have the witnesses and the view of the chair through the window, and we also have a view of the witnesses from behind Patrick Sonnier, who's about to be executed. And it goes back to what you talked about earlier about witnessing. And so here we have like levels of witnessing. So we have the witnesses looking through the window at the spectacle. We have Sister Helen looking at Patrick Sonnier, but we're also, as the audience in this panel where we're behind Patrick Sonnier, we are part of the process. And that's what I kind of wanted to have during the book, is to bring the audience in to say that nobody is not a part of this, because this is all legislation, this is all voting, this is all something that when Sister Helen's book came out, the support for the death penalty plummeted. So everybody who has agency has some sort of is implicated some way in every execution that happens. And so the views of the chair are a way for me to bring us into the chamber somehow and mm-hmm. understand that this object is not unrelated to us.
Right. Now, Rose and Sister Helen, I wonder if you talk a little bit about this book as the next step in your work, that you're reaching out to new readers and a younger generation.
So we need young people in this country to be awake to the deepest issues of human rights. And the Universal Declaration of Human Rights states in Article 3, which most nations in the world have adopted, that simply by being a person, you have an inalienable right to life. So how do you get young people to reflect deeply on this and bring them into proximity, to closeness of mm-hmm. it? So that's going to be the next wave. So with the help of donors, we are getting books out to young people, but we want to get it out all over the country. I just got an invitation to go to Dublin, Ireland. And I know that Random House distributes books in Ireland and England. Mm-hmm. It's global, but we're going to concentrate on getting to young people in the United States. And I get to talk to a lot of young people. I go to universities, especially law schools. And all this talk about young people being disconnected, I mean, it may be true that they're looking in their hands at their iPhones. So it's to get them to read, to bring them into the story, but to bring them into this journey, just what Catherine was saying. We are all connected, and we need you to be a part of this movement, to plug them in into this national abolition movement that we're going to launch a new wave in this country, and for them to be part of it.
That's fantastic. And Rose, what did you think about when you were putting this together? Because this is new to you, too.
Actually, it's changed a lot from when I thought of putting it together, which was sort of a continuation of the work we'd been doing. And what I feel about it now in the context of U.S. 2025, detention of immigrants, the ramping up essentially of cruelty as a policy. And as an Aussie, I spent my first 40 years in Australia. We abolished the death penalty in 1966. Mm. I've always thought that once a community abolishes the death penalty, then it sort of brings in the perimeter of allowable brutality. So when you have the death penalty, anything, you can do anything to a citizen because you kill your own citizens. Mm-hmm. But once you get rid of that, then suddenly life without parole looks horrific. And if you get rid of life without parole, which is also essentially the case in Australia, then 25 years without the possibility of parole looks like a really good sentence to apply to a human being who, when they go into prison for the crime they've committed, is unlikely to be anything like the person in 25 years later. So I feel that the current climate in America, in a way, is directly linked to the fact that Americans have allowed the brutality of killing their own citizens. It's like that's the outer perimeter, and everything inside is allowable.
Mm-hmm. And it's very tied, this is Helen, it's very tied to states that were once slave states. The pocket of executions now are all happening in the deep South states that were once slave states. And what one of the legacies of slavery did for white people, privileged white people like me and many of us, is it tended to make us inured to harsh punishment, because mm-hmm. in Louisiana, if a black man stole an apple or was caught loitering, they'd be thrown into prison. And we're the largest incarcerator in the United States, in Louisiana. And the connection with racism is severe and strong. And so that's part of what's going to be in the book, to bring out the connection.
The connective tissue is all through this book, which is really important.
Absolutely. Good.
What I love about this book is that it ends on the grace note of this struggle. Forgiveness is never going to be easy. Every day it must be struggled for and won. And this book takes us right into the very heart of that struggle, I think. It has been my honor to be talking with Sister Helen Prejean and Rose Vines and Catherine Anyango Grunewald about the graphic edition of Dead Man Walking. You can meet them at the Holy Name of Jesus Church at Loyola University on Thursday, November 13th at 7 for a talk and a book signing. Thank you all so much. It has been such an honor.
Thank you,
great.
Susan.
Thanks.
Thank you very much for the wonderful interview.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Ladarian Williams signs Blood at the Roots and Bones at the Crossroads and appears in conversation with Margot Weston, Saturday, October 25th at 4 at Baldwin & Company. Issa Quincy discusses and signs the new book, Absence, Wednesday, October 29th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Cree McCree signs My Life Under Deadline, Frontline Dispatches from a Trailblazing Woman Music Writer, Wednesday, October 29th at 6 at Octavia Books. Malcolm Gladwell signs the paperback edition of Revenge of the Tipping Point and appears in conversation with Walter Isaacson, Wednesday, October 29th at 7 at Baldwin & Company. This is a ticketed event and sales are limited. Charles Chamberlain discusses and signs New Orleans, a concise history of an exceptional city, Thursday, October 30th at 6 at Octavia Books. And coming up, the Friends of the Jefferson Parish Library hold their big book sale Friday through Sunday, October 24th through 26th at the Pontchartrain Center, Williams Boulevard at the Lake in Kenner. Hours are Friday and Saturday from 10 to 7 and Sunday, October 26th from noon to 5. Free admission, free parking. And the Friends of the New Orleans Public Library hold their really, really big book sale Saturday, October 25th. Members only from 10 to 11, open to the public from 11 to 3. It's at Ladder Library, 5120 St. Charles Avenue. And vote for the One Book, One New Orleans selection for 2026. Visit the group's Facebook page for more info. The three choices are the nonfiction work Brown Pelican by Ryan Fertel, the poetry collection Libre by Sky Jackson, and the novel Far Away From Here by Ambata Kazi. Don't miss the Louisiana Book Festival, Saturday, November 1st from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. in Baton Rouge. You'll find the action on 4th Street downtown at the State Library, the Capitol Park Museum, and other locations. More than 200 authors appear along with a full day of performances for young readers and family activities, and it's all free. Check out louisianabookfestival.org for the complete schedule and info and start planning your day. The creators of Dead Man Walking, the graphic edition, Sister Helen Prejean, Rose Vines, and Catherine Anyango Grunewald appear at Holy Name of Jesus Church at Loyola University Thursday, November 13th at 7 p.m. Words and Music coming up November 19th through 22nd has just released its full lineup too. Check it out at wordsandmusic.org. Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Hellis Foundation, the Jefferson Parish Public Library, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@WWNO.org.